Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 109 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And man, we are already a week away from Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to spending some time with the family and eating some good grub, and I'm betting you guys are too. One of my favorite holidays for sure, to get together with family and just talk about things that you normally don't get to talk about on an everyday basis, especially with everybody working today and doing their things. So looking forward to next week. It looks like we did schedule our episode for Thursday. We'll most likely have it on Friday, just so you guys are aware of that. And for episode 109 today, we are welcoming special guest Paul Ascoff, who is a researcher and investigator with over 50 plus years experience. He served 13 years as a qualified paramedic in the regular and territorial British Army, and he is the author of the book called UFOs, The Real Story, which goes into Paul's research, his very own sightings that he's had throughout his life as well. And he really gets into UFOs and the paranormal and the overlap between the two. So we have a lot of good, great information to go over today. And also, please go check out our sponsor, the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego, where he goes into the topics of ufology, the paranormal, and cryptozoology. His new episode this week is with special guest Michael Cameron, lifelong experiencer and author. You are not going to want to miss that one. So let's go ahead and bring our special guest, Paul Ascoff, on. So strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 109 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today we are going to be welcoming Paul Ascoff. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jesse. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been looking at your book every time I go on the flyingdiscpress.com. Looking over the authors, and I really has been an interest to reading the back of the book, and I haven't had you on, so I it's great to have you on today to be able to share the research that you've been doing, what's involved in your book, your service, all of it. So thank you for coming on today.
Okay, that's good.
So I know you've had 50 plus years as a researcher and investigator in the field of ufology. Where did all that start for you? Where did that begin? Was it a sighting or were it just an interest?
Yeah, sure. It was a sighting. Some of your listeners may have heard the story before, and I do narrate it in the book. But very briefly, we had just moved home to the edge of a small village in a very rural location between sort of on the border in Yorkshire, on the border between West and South Yorkshire. And the normal routine for my brother and I was just 11, and my brother was 9. And our normal routine was we had a disabled war veteran who lived next door who had dogs. So the last job of our job of the day was to take our dogs and his dogs for a walk, because you literally walked out of our home and into the fields. There were miles and miles of fields. So we'd take the dogs for a walk, come back, put the dogs away, say goodnight to mum and dad and go to bed. That was the routine. This particular night, it was early September. It was just getting dusk. And my father was in the front garden. And mum said, go outside, say goodnight to dad, then go to bed. We walked out and he sat on the bench. With our home faced due east. There was nothing in front of us you could see for miles. And looking due east to the north, the sky was completely covered in cloud, really thick grey cloud, but it finished very abruptly at this line, this bank of cloud. And then the whole of the southern sky was clear. Now, I'm talking a lot of years ago, we're talking 1968. So there wasn't the light pollution that there is now. There wasn't the amount of aircraft. There wasn't, any police, news or ambulance helicopters. There was nothing like that then, and only I would think 50%, maybe even less than that, of the air traffic that we have now. So my father was pointing out the major constellations that were just beginning to appear in the dusk, and you could see the stars with the brightest magnitude. And as he's pointing them out to us, now, my father wasn't an astronomer or anything, but he had an interest and he liked to involve the boys, as it were. And we were sat there, the three of us, looking at the sky. And as we did, all I could describe was two UFOs came flying, well, flying is the wrong word, but zooming out of this bank of cloud very fast and then just stopped dead. And it was like, if you can imagine, a V formation, but one was missing. So one was slightly to one side and slightly behind the other. Now, they were perfectly spherical, brilliant pearly white light. And you could actually see the light from them reflecting off the surface of the bank of cloud. Now, as they stopped dead, there was no deceleration. They were just boom, still. And the three of us were like mouths agape, watching in awe. And I quite clearly got what I can only describe as a friendly masculine voice in my head said, oops, we hadn't meant to have been seen. Now, I got that quite clearly in my head. And later, talking to my brother and my father, neither of them got that connection, but I did. But anyway, to carry on, they were only still for a few seconds, and then they set off again, no acceleration, moving very fast, moving away from us. Now, there was nothing apparently joining them together, but they kept the same position relative to each other. And as they moved down this bank of cloud, moving away from us, you could see how the light reflecting off them got brighter and then dimmer as the cloud sort of undulated as they moved along it. But the as they moved, there was this, it was like they were covered in an atmosphere which sort of sloughed off the back of them. And you could see this really tiny, like a teardrop shape off the back of this atmosphere. Now, they were quite large, I suppose, probably the size of a dime at arm's length, if you held the dime at arm's length. So you could see them very clearly. And they kept the same relative position. You could see no rotation, no strobes, no other lights, no anything, and absolutely no sound whatsoever until they moved out of sight and then we couldn't see them anymore. My father was the first to speak because we were all sat there in silence. And my father had done his national service with our Royal Air Force. And he just said, well, there's nothing we've got that can do that. And that was what got me hooked, because for me, it was, A, how could something physically look like that? How could something, move like that? How could it appear like that? But also, it was the nuts and bolts and how the physics of it worked, because it was so bizarre, so odd, so, for want of a better term, so alien, so obviously alien. That it wasn't something that was terrestrial. I have been asked that many times over the years where I've been involved within the field of ufology and people have said, how do you know when you see something? And I said, it's like a connection. You will know because it is so bizarre. It is so odd that you'll recognize that. Right. And then the other thing, yeah, moving on from that was, why don't I know about it? Because it was so obvious. It was so, what can I say, so bright in the sky so that anybody could have seen it. And it was like, why isn't this in the newspapers? Why isn't it on the television in the news? And why don't I know about this? Why is it just suddenly appeared in front of us? So that's what got me hooked. There you go.
So when you had that feeling that they were saying that they didn't want to be seen, did you bring that up afterwards and ask your father and brother about that?
Yeah. And my father, bless him, has been dead for quite a number of years now. But even my brother more recently, when I was sat down writing the book, and I made a point of asking him and going over the sighting with him, and he got no connection whatsoever. He can remember seeing the lights in the sky and the movement of the odd movement of them, but he didn't get that connection as I did. Okay. So I did ask that question, and I think that is one thing that as investigators, we find that different people do have different experiences with this.
Yeah, 100%. Had that ever bared any fruit in the future after that sighting? Did anything weird happen after that that might have correlated with that original sighting?
Well, I do document many sightings that I've had in the book, lots of them with witnesses, some many witnesses. But there was one strange one. My first good sighting for my wife was in September 2015. One of our neighbours had just had a baby. We live in a small cul-de-sac of 15 houses. And we live at the top of the cul-de-sac, so we're sort of surrounded by other properties. And everybody looks in on everybody else.
Right.
So it's quite a nice, close community. And one of the neighbours had just had a little baby boy, and she brought him round. So we were sat to the rear of our home in the garden, sat on the benches and the swing. And this lady in question had got a little boy, but already had sort of a 2-3-year-old. So I'm trying to entertain the other small toddler who's running all over the place and looking at birds and aeroplanes and generally causing a havoc like they do at that age. And while the ladies were cooing over this little baby, so there was 5 adults in the garden. And the ladies were just sat there, a cup of tea and a biscuit, and taking turns in holding the new baby. And as I sort of laid, I was playing in the garden with the toddler, and as we laid on our back, we're looking at the sky, and I'm pointing out birds and aeroplanes. And then I noticed this flash in the sky between the homes, between the roofs of the home. And it was like, how would you see in, how you would see an aeroplane turning in the sun and reflecting the light? So I just looked, and it was like the Strictly Come Dancing glitter ball just sat there. And it was like, whoa. And it was very small. It was a long way off. So I jumped up. And we have a conservatory, like a lanai at the back of our home. And I went to the side of that to sort of line up and make sure it wasn't moving and that it wasn't just an aircraft or anything else. And it was just hanging there in the sky. So, of course, I'm like, come over here and look at this. And the 5 of us saw it. Now, there were 5 adults. I had my binoculars. I had 2 iPads. So we had like 5 cell phones between us. And this thing moved towards us very, very slowly. I would say you couldn't tell the distance, but I would say it's an angle of maybe 50 degrees in the sky, and moved up to maybe 60, 65 degrees from the horizon in almost due north, slightly east of north, but almost due north. And then it was stationary for about 30 seconds, and then it started moving west. Now, all in all, we had this insight until it sort of seemed to fade away and disappear for about 5 minutes. But within that 5 minutes, not one of us thought to take a picture. And we could have recorded it on phones, on the cell phones, on the iPads. I even looked at it through the binoculars, and none of us even, it didn't. And it was like afterwards when we're talking about it, we're, wow, did you want that? And it was then, why didn't I take a picture? Why didn't we record it?
Right.
And I believe that they do have this ability to completely control the atmosphere that they're seen in.
Yeah, I believe that 100%. I hear a lot of people say that they didn't get the urge to take the photograph. And it has to be something that they're able to control us or make us not really think to actually take that action and take a video or a photograph. We know many times they can malfunction different technology and devices and phones. So if they can do that, they can probably stop us from taking the photo, I would assume, right?
Yeah. I mean, I collated in the book the amount of sort of the majority of sightings that I have had, and I've included photographs and one video that I took. I put a still in from that. But the last one that I included in there was in July last year, July 22. And I managed to get that in the book before it was published. So there are quite a number of different things where there were multiple witnesses. One that was a really good sighting in there that was in September 21. And there were 8 adults and 5 children. And we had it in sight for 40 minutes. And again, this is something else I can go into if you wish, but it was really, really difficult to take a picture of it. Even though it was in sight for so long, it was very difficult to get a photograph.
Yeah, could you kind of describe that feeling, like what made you feel that way and what you were going through?
Yeah, well, in a lot of occasions, for us, it was something that was, again, so bizarre, so odd. It was September 21. So really, the world had just been given the all clear and flights had started to go back all over the world, because where we are in central England, the flights from most of mainland Europe, like Holland, Germany, France, fly over us as they're flying north, up sort of like where they go around at the north of England and Iceland, Greenland, to come back down your side of the pond. So they all fly on that sort of air route, if you like. So we do get a lot of aircraft flying over us. But on this one, we had two of them had flown away from not seeing any from the lockdown. And then suddenly there were two aircraft, not side by side, but on the same path, if you like, separated. So to see two aircraft going over, that got my attention. But then what really got my attention was this brilliant, brilliant pinpoint white light high in the sky behind them. And even when they'd gone, the contrails, as they were dissipating, sort of the wind took it past and this remained stationary. And it was like, I shouldn't be able to see that. This is like early evening, sort of normal tea time, 5-6 o'clock in the evening. Why can I see something that bright with such a high magnitude in the sky? So that's when I got the camera out, got the binoculars out, and I actually had time to get two reclining chairs because I have a pair of the Celestron night vision binoculars that are 25 times magnification,
okay.
But they're very heavy. So it's handy to lean right back and let your sort of body take the weight of them instead of holding them up all the time, if you know what I mean. But yeah, there was 1 to 8 adults, myself, my wife, and another 6 that came over and were watching with us, looking through the different, because by then I've got 3 sets of binoculars out. I've got my trusty old Carl Zeiss 10B50s. But we were taking it in turns using the binoculars. And it was afterwards, it was stationary, then moved very, very slowly in a westerly direction towards us. And then it was stationary again. And then I went in the home because it wasn't doing anything. I went and got my telescope out to see if I could get the telescope on it to see more detail. Because to the naked eye, it was just a white pinpoint of light. But through the larger binoculars, you could see it was like a ring donut, like a donut on its edge. And around it, you've got all these fast flickering, really quick moving orbs coming and going all the time. And it almost left like an after image. You know, you get the different color after image behind you when you're looking at something bright.
Yes.
You got that behind them as well. And now myself, my wife, and one of our neighbors saw that. And it was while I was setting the telescope up to get a closer look, it suddenly started moving off very quickly north and then zoomed off and disappeared. But again, our neighbor said, he said, wow, that was weird, was his first words when it had gone. But it's a feeling, I think, it's a feeling that you get that you know it's not of this earth, it's not terrestrial. And I know there are people that think, we've reverse engineered things and a lot of them may be military, but from my very first sighting and others that I investigated afterwards when I was with the British UFO Research Association, you do get this odd, this bizarre anything that happens that has just defy all logic and explanation.
Yeah, and you even spent some time in the military yourself. Yeah, I mean, 13 years. So, I mean, you would be familiar if something was in your arsenal that would, you know, be close to what that was capable of doing, and there's nothing like that.
Yeah, I used to teach aircraft recognition, we all know, especially when I was in there, it was at the height of the Cold War. I was stationed in Berlin when the wall was still up, so we had to know what was on our side and what wasn't, if you know what I mean. My sort of involvement with it has never gone away, and I've always had the odd sightings, maybe dare I say, once a year. But sometimes twice, sometimes I'd miss a year. But I've always had sightings, and I don't know why. And don't ask me, because I haven't the faintest idea. I think for me, it's just a case of look, because once you've seen one, and you know that they're there, you know that they're around you all the time. And it's a case of I'm always looking at the sky. So whether that's part to do with it or not, I don't know. But if you wish, Jesse, I'll go into a little more explanation of why I think we see and experience what we do.
Yeah, I would love to hear about that, because that's a big part of your book. So yeah, please.
What I found, and I mean, you'll say the same, you tend to get a lot of people that tend to stick to a specific sighting or a specific area, but we'll just say the paranormal or cryptids or poltergeists or UFOs, or we'll say Skinwalker Ranch, or even Pascagoula, Dr. Irina Scott and Philip Mantle, how they really got the bit between the teeth and done the
absolutely
fabulous book. And it's wonderful that they've managed to get all this corroborative evidence that does help people make that leap of faith, if you like, because I always say that everybody should be skeptical, and it's only when you see something that is so bizarre that then, for me, it was like a light bulb moment. It was like, well, I knew this all along, really.
Right.
And it was, it just changes your way of thinking, because you know that you're not alone now. You know that they are out there. It's unequivocal, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I tried to do with the book and my experiences over the years was, instead of just doing what I call a piece of the pie or a piece of the jigsaw, I've tried to look at it on a broader spectrum and look at the whole picture and include everything, because it is all connected. So if I may just go into a bit of an explanation, if that's all right.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes till the break. Go ahead.
Okay. Our normal everyday matter that we deal with our normal electromagnetic spectrum, has the longer waves and the lower energy, the radio waves at one end. Then you come up through the infrared to the visible light and the acoustic spectrum that we actually deal with. And then you get the ultraviolet and then X-rays. And all the while, these are getting shorter and higher energy to the gamma rays at the far end. Now, that's what we deal with on a daily basis. And out of all of that, we can measure some of it. We can manipulate a little bit of it, but we're only scratching the surface. But the actual acoustic spectrum of the visible light that we actually see and hear and deal with is less than 0.1% of that. But then, to take that even further, these cosmologists and peoples with far better brains than I have are now saying that dark energy and dark matter make up the large majority of the universe, and they're bandying figures around the latest to something, I'm saying something, approximately 35% of it is dark matter, 60% of it is dark energy. So you have all this other 95% of the energy in the universe, and all these other different planes, these other different energies, these other different vibrations that are around us as well. We're only seeing 0.1% of 5% of it. So it just shows how little we know of what's going on. And in my opinion, ET is aware of all of it, is completely able to control it, is able to understand it and can manipulate it. And that is why we see and hear what we do.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the universe is way too big for one civilization. I mean, we haven't even seen past our own. I can imagine how much other life is out there. And we're talking microbial. We're talking about real other humans, possible races of ET. So I'm right there with you as well. And I believe they're fully in control of the whole situation. Absolutely. So let's go ahead and take our break real quick. When we get back, we can kind of get into the UFO paranormal overlap that you kind of talk about a little bit, because that's a really interesting aspect. Many people, you know, they kind of separate those things, but there's a big overlap with the both of them. I'd like to get into. So let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll be back right after these commercial messages. This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
Looking to get some UFO merchandise? We'll get some UFO Encounters Worldwide official stickers, and we also have pins. Check out our selection, DM us or email us if you're interested for inquiry, and we'll show you our selection. All pins and stickers are $3 each and $1 shipping. Or you can mix and match any five for $10 and free shipping. DM us or send us an email if you're interested. All right, welcome back to the second half of episode 109. We're sitting down with our special guest, Paul Askoff. So before the break, we were kind of touching on the UFOs and the paranormal fields and the overlap between the two. You talk about that in your book, which is UFOs, the Real People. Could you kind of get into that a little bit, how that overlaps?
Sure. What happens is, if you imagine our electromagnetic spectrum as an old vinyl LP, so that is what we deal with on a normal daily basis. Gamma rays at one end, energy waves at the other, and this tiny bit in the middle of our visible light and our acoustic spectrum. That is our plane, our vibration, our energy that we work on. However, there's all this dark energy and dark matter that surround us that are on these different planes and different energies, different dimensions, whatever you want to call it. This is what ET understands and what we don't. That's why there's a lot of overlap between the paranormal and ufology, because we don't understand it, but it's the same mechanism that works everything. So if you imagine that electromagnetic spectrum on one record, we'll just say for argument's sake, it's in the middle of this stack of 15, 20 records. That is what the energy that we work on. And that is why spirit mediums work, mediumship, when they work between them, and That is why ET can control the dimensions between one and the other. One of the things that Bud Hopkins, Dolores Cannon, Kath Marden more recently, John Mack, they all said the same thing, that when the abductees were talking about ET, everything was done with thought. And that's because, as in my case, when I got that projected into my head, was, oops, we hadn't meant to have been seen. It was just a small sentence, but it was directly mind to mind, because it's speech that uses language, and ET use telepathic communication, they use thought, and it's direct into the mind. And that is why there's never any language problem, because it's, you get the full meaning, you get everything, you get the whole package, and you get the intention behind it. And this is one of the things that I've always gone along with, is because we're, in my opinion, a lower species, we're not as well developed, we can't control our thoughts. Even as we're talking or listening to this now, our minds can wander and get distracted. But ET can control their thoughts, and that is why their craft are controlled by thought. And if you think about it, that is why the movement of it, they're completely isolated in their own little bubble of universe, if you like. And this bubble goes wherever they go. So from the movement point of view, they're not actually moving. It's only how we perceive them to be moving. So these bizarre maneuvers and turns and so-called G-forces and 10,000 miles an hour, totally irrelevant. They're not moving. It's only us that see that. That's why you get these stooges, if I dare use the word, on television that say, ah, but there was no flight plume, there was no heat exhaust, there was no flight surfaces, and it, rubbish, you know. It's because that's our physics, that's not theirs. They're not using that at all. They're in their own little pocket of universe that they control with their mind, and they go, and it's instantaneous. And that is why I think in the old, dare I say the old days, as I came onto the UFO scene, it was always flying saucers from outer space, because that was the what people thought. But as science has moved on, and as ufology has moved on, it now makes more sense that what they're actually doing is ET is able to control all these different frequencies. And that is why the abductees experience what they do. That is why we as observers occasionally witness what we do. They have this bubble around them. Now, this is the same. If you imagine, we'll just take Skinwalker Ranch as an example. There are, I believe, these geographical areas all over the world. You've heard of the Alaska Triangle, the Welsh Triangle, they're all over the place.
Right.
And I think, not that the triangular, these are these little sort of labels that people tend to put on things. I believe that the areas will actually move with the magnetic field. But I believe that we have these short circuits where the records, the vinyl actually touches, and you get these portals, which is what some people call them, between the dimensions and between the different levels. And that is why you get a lot of poltergeist and paranormal, a lot of cryptid activity in these areas, but also you get a lot of UFO activity. And for me, the cryptids and the paranormal are the, if for want of a better term, the dimensions and the records that are closest to us, or maybe even right next to us. But ET is able to move up and down through the different dimensions because they can understand it and control it and manipulate it. So they use these areas as a shortcut, if you like. For them, it's just a case of zipping through from one. So that's why often we get these flashes in the sky and we get a lot of UFO activity and orbs and other things seen all in the same area. Another thing that's common throughout all this is people that often see the paranormal, cryptids and UFOs will experience absolute terror, visceral terror. And I mean, they terrify to such an extent that if, as an investigator, you take them back to the sighting or the place, the location where it was. They don't even like going there because they think it's going to happen. They feel like they'll feel like they're being watched. And it's the same with the cryptids and the paranormal. And they'll say, I have this terror. And it's because, in my opinion, again, your soul, your higher self, your energy, because we're all energy, everything is energy. And that's what it all boils down to. So if we met in real life, Jesse, we would know immediately if we were going to get on, because your magnetic field would react with my magnetic field. So therefore you get that. I mean, we even use the right phrases. We even say we were on the same wavelength.
Right.
And this is what happened. And if you were sort of meeting somebody, you know immediately if you're going to get on with them or not. Well, because of that energy, because ET understands that energy, this is why they can hone in on an individual. That's why they can keep taking the same people on abductions. I mean, just using Calvin Parker, bless him, who just left us, as an example, he naturally only remembered the Pascagoula incident in October 73. However, when Kathmandu did regressive hypnotherapy to try and get more detail, subsequently, we found out that Calvin had actually been abducted on four occasions, two before then and one afterwards. So because everything you think is an energy, your thoughts are an energy, therefore, it becomes easy for ET that understands that to decide if you're going to remember anything at all, or if you're going to have, what can you say, screen memories. If like there was I can remember a vehicle at the side of the road, or I can remember an owl in a tree. Yeah. And we often get that where you just get a more familiar memory rather than remembering everything about it. And I think in some ways is that a bizarre act of kindness on the part of ET, so that people don't remember everything, you know. But then to move on that further, so we've said that's why we get the visceral terror, because your higher self, your soul energy knows it's entering a different vibration. It's entering a frequency where it shouldn't be. And I think that's why we get that. And I think it's an inbuilt thing. So that's why they get that terror. But also one thing that we also hear is the absolute silence. Somebody will just suddenly say, it's gone quiet. And by quiet, I mean total silence. Suddenly there's no background hum of traffic, or there are no birds in the seas, trees. They can't hear anything. And that's because you've moved, you're in the right place. You've entered that bubble on another record, if you like. So suddenly you're not within our acoustic spectrum. That's why you can't hear anything.
Huh. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then the other thing, so that's with the other thing was these coercive reactions that we discussed earlier, where if they want you to remember something, they will. If they want you to photograph them, if they don't want you to photograph them, then you won't do, because they know you. They can, each energy is like a fingerprint to them. Everybody is an individual, so they know that individual. So they have these coercive reactions. Many times I've heard people, I have a nephew who was in the army for many years, and now he works on vessel protection in the Gulf, protecting from these pirates. So these are supposed to be the big badass guys who go out in darkness, no lights, protecting the shipping. And he said, Paul, the night sky is unbelievable. He says, we're in the middle of the ocean. There's nothing near us. You can see everything. It's fantastic. And he says, we do see odd things from time to time. And he said, in this one night, he said, we're watching this big light. He just described it as a big light in the sky that was stationary. He says, we were just going along, he says, actually sailing towards it. And he said, but as we got closer, he says, we could see these other smaller objects that were coming and going. This big one remained stationary. But he says, the closer we got to it, he says, suddenly, he says, there were three of us that stood up on the deck watching. He says, suddenly, all three of us were very afraid. All three of us got scared. And he said, without even thinking about it, he says, all three of us got up, went down below decks, tightened the hatches behind us and just went to bed. And he said it was that coercive thing. He said, now thinking about it, he said it was bizarre, really, because we'd been watching this thing for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. He says, and then as we're getting closer, he said, all three of us just got scared, got up, closed the hatch behind us and went to bed. And he said, and we didn't discuss it till the next day. And there was another one. I have a sister and cousins who are all girls that go on rent a holiday cottage and go out in the countryside. And they do that once a year. And they were in the middle of nowhere in Wales. And one night there were these lights above this forest near where they were. And they said they'd been watching it for about 10 minutes. And then they just wanted to close the curtains. And like they didn't want to see them, like we shouldn't be watching them. And two of them went to bed and one of them stayed up doing something different. But none of them went back to look through the curtains and look out the window and see if the lights were still there. So you do get that coercive, because it's you think about it, your thoughts, everything is an energy. And if they can they can influence that. There's one thing on one of the instances which I give in my book. I used to work for the ambulance service, and you did 12-hour shifts, and you worked 12-hour day or a 12-hour night. So you were sat in front of loads of computers and everything else, and it's very full on. So when you get a break, I used to make a point of getting out and going for a walk, because otherwise you were just sat on your BTM in front of a desk all day.
Right.
So when we got a break, my colleague and I, we used to go out and go for a walk for 30 minutes, come back, and then you'd carry on. But at least you'd had a bit of exercise. And this night it was 3:30 in the morning, something like that. And as we're walking back, this light came out of a cloud. Now, initially, we thought it was an aircraft coming towards us because it was on a normal flight path. However, the small local airfield where we live near, which is Leeds Bradford Airport, doesn't have any flights normally from like 1 o'clock till 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's very seasonal, if you like. And in the winter time as well, there's even less flights. So this light came out of the cloud, and for whatever reason, straight away, I thought it was odd. And I got my mobile phone out and tried to video it. Now, I videoed it for 18 seconds. It turns out that's how long the video was. And it was just this oval light with different flashes of lights inside it, but it didn't move, it was stationary. So I videoed it, then I put the phone down because I wanted to look at it with my eyes. And as I put the phone down, it was, for all the world, the impression I got was, there you go, thank you very much. And it just moved sideways back into the cloud and we never saw it again. Huh. And it was honestly, the impression I got was, it just appeared so that I could video it and then it went. But that was the impression that it gave, you know.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, that happened to you when your first sighting occurred. So it's interesting it happened again later in life.
Yeah, the I do believe that they have this connection and they know they're complete masters of the whole of the magnetic spectrum. And we're only scratching the surface of it. And that's part of it. I mean, these other things that make me laugh with the Skinwalker Ranch and these others, where they're doing these experiments, and all of a sudden the batteries go flat.
Yes.
Everything just switches off and everything just drains. And it's like, yeah, because they know they can control it. So
absolutely.
It's like, yeah, you're not doing that, so I'll just let you carry on, and then when you think you're going to do it, we'll just turn it off.
Right.
And the other thing is a field investigator, which many, many of us have come across, is the batteries are suddenly drained and it's like, well, I'm sure I checked them and they're all right. They haven't done that before. And I had that on one instance. We went to Bempton Cliffs with Paul Sinclair and Chris Evers. And Chris was actually interviewing Paul for the Outer Limits magazine. So there were a group of us there, maybe a dozen people, and we're looking at the sky. And I'd actually got an infrared camera with me. Not a camera, like binoculars, but infrared. And as I held it up, a proper like night vision thing, and it just went dead in my hand completely. And I'd charged it up to go with it specifically to look. And I believe that if you enter into these areas, like if, as I said earlier, go into this bubble and you're getting close to where the event is, or the whatever it is, whether it's cryptids, whether it's paranormal, or whether it's UFOs. This crossing over of dimensions has the ability to drain any energy near it that is stored. So anything that contains a battery, the energy that's left in that battery will be drained to further that.
So when it comes to today, you know, the modern day field of ufology, do you see that the abduction phenomenon is becoming more prevalent, or do you just think it's more people talking about it now?
Yeah, I do believe more people are talking about it. I think that if you think about it, in the past, we didn't have the connections that we have now. It's like when I started and I wanted to get into UFOs, it wasn't even your local library or bookstore, didn't even have anything on UFOs.
Right.
Well, now they do, but also we can just go on the internet and everything's at our fingertips. So it's like me taking that video of the UFO. People all have cameras with them now all the time. So we do get this now where people are becoming much more aware. And also I do believe we're getting this, I'm not going to say disclosure because I don't believe that will ever happen. They're not ever going to say, yes, we covered Roswell up, or yes, that did happen at the missiles did go offline at Rendlesham Forest and all the rest of it. None of that will ever happen. But I do believe we'll get this drip feed of gradual, what can I say, acclimatization of the public, so that it's more acceptable and that people don't panic and we don't get this, you know, insane sort of anxiety from the public at large, and that it'll just say, oh yeah, we've known about it for the last 10 years, and oh yeah, they told us about that 10 years ago. And so I think we're getting this drip feed of information slowly to acclimatize everybody. I mean, if you look just a few years ago, when I did the Pentagon Files documentary for EM Productions, and that was in response to the Pentagon releasing the Go Fast, Tic Tac and Gimbal UFO videos. But again, that was only three videos, and they even said at the time, they had another 80. They had another 77.
Right.
They had 80 examples that had been seen by trained observers, that had been recorded in infrared on the gun cameras and been recorded or photographed from the carrier fleet underneath. So they've got 80 examples of that. So, but they only let those three. And again, it comes under national interest, so we can't show you any further.
Right. So how's the UK's outlook on the UFO phenomenon compared to here in the States? Because I know we're not fully up to the same level. I know Australia is very behind, but how is it in the UK?
Oh, I think the thing is, and I think it's the same in the States as well as the UK.
Okay.
We've got some wonderful, wonderful investigators out there and people that are now thinking outside the box and writing these books that help everybody. I mean, all I've done, I'm just a normal Joe who's written my experiences down, and I sort of put things together as I see them. It's like the, just going back now to the Nimitz encounter and the videos that they released, or the video that they released. Again, terrible quality, really. It's not showing you any detail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this is another thing that I always said. I've put photographs in my book, and if any of the listeners are interested, I have a page on Facebook called It's the Real Story. And It's the Real Story is just a page where I put UFO things on. So I've got my videos and my photographs, and I put them all on there. But just as an aside for that, we won't get any clear pictures, and we can't get any clear pictures, because all you're looking at is the specific area of the craft, if you want to call it that, that's within our visible spectrum. And because it's not just in our visible spectrum, it can be moving through, and it could be majority of it in another dimension altogether. So that's why you never get clear pictures of UFOs. That's why we see these flashes of light in the sky as they move from one vibration to another, as they move from one frequency to another, as they move from one vibration to another. So as they move down, and just literally as they go through the bit where our visible light is, that's when we see it.
Right.
Now, it's difficult to say that when you're on your own, but if there's a group of you, as we were that on that occasion at Brampton Cliffs, there were a few occasions when he was being interviewed that four or five of us saw a flash of light in the sky. So when there's a group of you that are all seeing the same thing, then obviously it's just not just a medical thing where you may have high blood pressure or something like that. It's more structured, you know, you've got more corroborative evidence that it is something else that you're seeing.
Right. Absolutely. So we're actually at the end of the show already. It always flies by when we're getting good information. Great conversation today too, Paul. Do you want to tell everybody where they can follow you at, where they can get the book at, and, you know, all the information you have?
Sure. Well, as I've just said, I have a Facebook page called It's the Real Story, where I put all UFO-related things on. And then my book is UFOs, The Real Story. The revised edition is available on Amazon, and it's available as an ebook, in paperback or hardback. And I believe it's available on Audible as well.
Okay, great. Excellent. Yeah, I'll make sure I put the link in the description of the episode with your bio. This way, if anybody's interested, they can go ahead over there and get a copy. I want to thank you for coming on today, Paul, and sharing all this information. I mean, this is a wealth of knowledge, and the research that you've done is above and beyond. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Absolutely. And I want to thank everybody else for tuning in to episode 109 of our episode today. Please go and check out our sponsor, the podcast called Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. You can get that in the description of the episode below or over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. And remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, I really want to give a big thank you to Paul Askoff for coming on today and sharing his experience with us, his research, his investigations, and just his lifelong experience in the field of ufology. So I really want to thank him. That's 50 plus years. That's something that you really want to pay attention to, somebody that has that much experience. So thank you, Paul, for coming on and sharing all that with us today. Go check out his book called UFOs, The Real People. You can find that at flyingdiscpress.com, also on Amazon. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Next week for Thanksgiving week, we are going to have special guest Gary Jones. I do realize that we scheduled for Thursday, which is Thanksgiving at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're probably going to have to push that to Friday when we were scheduling. We didn't realize that. So we'll definitely have him on no matter what, because he's also written another good book, somebody that's been in the field for a while, another writer at Flying Disc Press. So we'll definitely check that out. And I want to thank everybody for tuning into this week's episode, full of great information, as always, with these guests. They're great people, and I really enjoy sitting here and being able to have them on the show and sharing this information with all of you. I also want to announce there was the UnX Network, which we are on every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, recently had their X conference, and I was actually voted Researcher of the Year, voted in by the people, and I really just want to give a big thank you to everybody that voted for me. We work so hard behind the scenes as researchers and investigators in this field. And a lot of this stuff goes on behind closed doors and it's not really seen. So to get voted for by as many people as that voted for me, it just makes it all worth it in the end. And I really want to thank everybody for that. It was a surprise and it made my year, really. So thank you, everybody that voted me for Researcher of the Year, Investigator of the Year. I appreciate it. We'll be getting that plaque soon, so we'll take some pictures and we'll make sure we post them up. But I just wanted to let you guys all know that. Please go and check out the podcast, Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. Absolutely amazing guest that he's having on, dealing with the field of ufology, the paranormal, and cryptozoology. go over to our website. You can find all that information out and also in the episode description below. Our website is ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And we also have our Facebook page you guys can join, which we post every week about who's coming on. You can ask questions, get involved in giveaways. We run polls and so much more. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to episode 109 today. This is your host, Jesse Peek. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will see you guys next week, as always. And remember to keep your eyes in the sky.